Hey, this is Jay Young with King Operating. Have you ever considered paying less money in taxes? Would you like to do what the wealthy do and invest in oil and gas? Go on our website, kingoperating.com, and get my book about our model, ADD, Acquire, Develop, and Divest, or call our number 214-420-3000 to talk to somebody today about investing in oil and gas and saving money on your taxes.
The Jay Young Show is a weekly podcast featuring insightful discussions with anyone from big business CEOs, celebrities, to military heroes. Each interview is a personal conversation about business, life, and anything in between. And now, your host, Jay Young.
Hey everybody, Jay Young for another episode of The Jay Young Show. I appreciate that. And what I want to talk about today, you know, right now we're still going through some unprecedented times in the world. Coronavirus and deaths and everything. And man, hang in there. We're going to get through this all together. It's going to be a lot of fun when we get on the other side. We're going to have sports. We're going to have education. We got to get these kids into school. No question about it. And everybody's like, well, what about the 20-30% that don't have computers? Well, you can't make the other 70% dumb for not having the 30% not having computers. We need to get them back into school. We've got to get sports going. We've got to get everything back to normal. And when that happens, you're going to see oil prices skyrocket. And when you see oil prices skyrocket, you're going to see our asset increase dramatically over the next year. That's what our goal is to deploy capital into our project. Once we do, I don't know what the price of oil is going to be next year, but I know what I can do with the money by drilling wells. And that's what we do. But I can predict the price of oil. I've already written in Forbes $65 a barrel, but I can't tell you exactly what it's going to be. But I know that if it is, you know, $20 break even, $40 is 100% return, 200% returns at 60. I think it's 300% returns at 80. I mean, it just continues to go there because I got the technical people to tell me how much oil is coming out of the ground. And then I handed over to the finance people and I said, okay, so now if it's $40, $60, $80 a barrel, what's the value going to be? Because our project is to scale it and sell it. Scale it and sell it. That's our new motto. We just came up with that last week. And talking to a lady from Nate, Jana, I know you're out there listening. Appreciate you listening. But scale it and sell it. And I will give her the credit for that. So that's what our goal is. Today, I've got a guy on that is from New York. The good news is he's not a Philadelphia Eagle fan. No, I'm just kidding. There's a lot of great Philadelphia Eagle fans out there. He's a New York Jet fan, which we don't really know about that because we're NFC East, Dallas Cowboys. But you know what? You got to love everybody. So we're going to talk about 1031s. We're going to talk about John Maggi. And John is – in Pennsylvania, he does 1031 exchanges. He is an entrepreneur. He has set the goal and set the height of all this for a long period of time because he's telling them what to do, what not to do in the 1031 exchanges. We're going to talk about some special purpose entities that he's doing. John, welcome to the show today. Thanks for being on.
Thank you, Jay. Nice to be here.
Absolutely. So how we met was through our 1031 exchange program. You know, we have, you know, when we go out to deploy capital in our projects, we're looking for a certain amount of money. In this case, $50 million. And it doesn't matter to me where the $50 million, if it comes from people that want to invest and get 100% write-off, if they want to do it in their qualified funds, or if they want to do it through qualified funds. It doesn't matter to me. I just want the money to come in so I can deploy that capital and to drill the wells and increase the value as we talked about earlier. Mm-hmm. And one of the best things that one of my guys came to me and he said, man, this John Maggi guy, this guy is really excited about oil and gas. He's excited about what you do because, you know, we bought Royalty before and Royalty's just, it's slow, man. I mean, you buy it, you mm-hmm. know, you can buy it and you can get your money back in 20, 30 years, maybe, you know, because it's so expensive today. You can buy it. You have to pay so much for it, and you may or you may not ever get all your money back.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's these oil and gas programs that don't. I wrote the book Upside of Oil and Gas Investing because what I wanted to do was wanted to tell people, hey, you know what? Scale it and sell it, Jenna. Thank you very much for that. But John, so where did you tell us about where you grew up and tell us a bit about yourself.
Well, a little bit. I grew up on Long Island, New York, and I used to work for a tech company up there. And eventually they moved their corporate headquarters down to near where I am now in Philadelphia here. And I moved with them. And as I kind of grew within this company, it was called Sperry and Unisys. It was a tech company. And I kind of saw some needs. I was in charge of the real estate for a while. And one of the things I saw is that companies were trying to accomplish transactions, but you really needed like another third party to make the transaction work. So I saw this need, and the need was for like special purpose entities, which a qualified intermediary is a form of. You need this kind of third party middleman to facilitate the transaction, whether for legal or other purposes, or tax purposes, whatever. And so I started the company. It was used to be called Congress Exchange. Now it's Congress Asset Exchange. Like 25, well, more than that, I guess almost 30 years ago. And we've been working our way along ever since. We started pretty much just with 1031s. We worked with exclusively a couple of larger banks when we started. And then we started branching out. We started dealing with more banks and, you know, more people and got into more types of investments. And that's kind of where we are today.
Got you. So what year was this? Around what year was that all this started?
Oh, the early 90s. The early 90s we went. It was like at the kind of the infancy of 1031s when they started to, you know, the Starker case, and they started to put some rules and restrictions in place. Before that, it was like the Wild West with exchanges. And now little by little, it's kind of whittled itself down. You know, it's pretty structured right now. It has definite rules.
Okay. All right. That's good. So how does a client interested in initiating a 1031 exchange get started with you? How does that all start? So tell us first, what is your definition? When somebody at a Starbucks goes, hey, what do you do for a living? What's your normal elevator pitch?
Oh, well, we say we do special purpose entities and we're qualified intermediaries for 1031 transactions. Oh yeah, what's that? It's where you can defer taxes. So if you sell, now it's real estate. If you sell a piece of real estate and you're going to purchase then another piece of real estate and you do it through this 1031, section 1031 process, you don't have to pay the tax on the sale of the property, you know, obviously that you're selling. You defer it because, and I call it investing in America. You're going to sell and you're going to reinvest and you're going to put those dollars to work again. Basically anything you take out of the transaction would be taxable, of course, but most people like to roll over as much as they can because it behooves them, you know, and they can grow their business. They get more and more and bigger and better real estate.
Right.
And also, as you know, involved real estate has a very broad definition. It includes, for instance, what you're doing with the oil and gas, properties there.
Right.
They're considered like kind.
Yeah. I made the Miller Canfield is our attorneys in Detroit. And when I was talking to them, I was like, you know, I said, it's like a royalty. We did royalties 10 years ago. And I don't think some of our clients have gotten all their money back yet on some of those transactions. Why? Well, because natural gas prices, number one, were $10 to $12 a thousand. You know, because if the oil prices don't stay up and they quit drilling, you're kind of cut off. So my buddy came to me and I started this new model and that reason I wrote the book. Is it, you know, the best way to increase value over a time period is by drilling good wells in a good area. And that's what we did. That's what we did with our property in Scurry County. We made a, you know, 130% return for clients in a very short time. But how do you do this with a 1031? Because it's not royalty.
Mm-hmm.
It's drilling. So you want to take drilling. So my buddy, David Moore in the apartment business, you know, they did a lot of 1031s in 1031s with apartments because, and I said, it's the same thing. Drilling is the same thing. All we're doing is we're buying the minerals. We're attaching that like-kind exchange to the minerals leases. We're leasing all the properties. Colorado, we have 20,000 acres. We're going to increase the value by drilling. It's kind of like, you know, what they do is they increase the value by, you know, painting the clubhouse or by doing anything. I mean, they put refrigerators in, new refrigerators. They increase the value. Once they increase the value, they increase the rent. They get more money. Then they sell it and they make tons of money. You know, and I said ours is the same way. You know, and that is exactly right. I cannot wait for the next 2-3 years because we have 3 assets right now. One's on the market. We're going to have 2 more, and I don't think it's the right time to sell yet. People are too leery. But we're going to have 1 or 2 assets sell between now and the end of next year, hopefully 2 to 3. And people are going to see that you can increase the value tremendously in a very, very short time. You're in Pennsylvania. A friend of mine up there is drilling. He had 4 rigs running back when gas prices were $3. He's making $1 billion a year. Making $1 billion a year, Trevor Reese Jones. And I said, Trevor, why do you have 4 rigs running? Man, you're already worth $3 or $4 billion. He said, Jay, he said, man, I love making money and I love giving it away. And of course, you know, he's got all the money in the world, but he understands how to make money.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is how you make money.
You know, it's interesting about what you're doing is that a lot of people don't realize it's a like-kind exchange. Like, you're selling real estate, and you're going to go into this oil and gas investment, and they go, is that like-kind? Well, yes, it is, according to the definition of real estate, which is very broad. Like we did, way back in the day, we did exchanges for pipelines. We were selling gas stations and exchanging it for pipelines, you know, oil and gas pipelines, way, way back. And so but people don't realize how broad the definition is. And right. So they have to realize that this is an option for themselves to do. And, but it's not intuitive, you know, for people.
Right, right.
You have to tell them about it.
People are like, people have such a bad taste in their mouth because they've lost money in oil and gas. They get involved in that one well deal that somebody's out promoting a deal, and it's a one well deal, and it costs $1 million to drill the well, and they buy $100,000 worth for 10%, and then they drill the well, and it either comes in or doesn't, and they get some money, they get a little income, and then all of a sudden, they don't sell it. So in 3-4 years, the well goes dry, they go dry, their investment's gone, they only got 60% of their money, and they're like, okay, so that wasn't very much fun. But what I'm telling you is that if you increase the value of an asset over a very, very short time frame by raising the equity, find a good place to drill, increase the value, and then sell it, scale it, sell it, then that's how you can return your capital. But, John, this is not about me. This is about you, right? So let's go. I know you're very good, John. You're trying to put it back over on me and all that. See what you're doing. But let's talk more about you, and let's talk more about, you know, what it is that you do, because I want to talk about some of these special – what did you say earlier, special purpose?
Purpose entities, yeah.
How do you do one of those, and what's next for you on a special purpose entity?
Well, we set them up for a variety of reasons. Could be for tax reasons, financial reasons, risk management. You want to separate or segregate something. And what we do is we establish an entity that is bankruptcy remote. It stands by itself. It's not like a house of cards, dominoes, rather. You know, if one falls, they all fall. They all stand independently of each other. It has some interesting features to it from an accounting and a leverage perspective, and from a from the client's perspective, it has a lot of benefits. Let's just put it that way.
Okay. Yeah.
Sorry about
that. Tax wise, or just structuring it to where they get the right leverage off of it. Not too much leverage, but enough leverage off of it. So that's kind of so you set these up for clients. So you'll find clients and set these up for him. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
All right.
In addition to the normal 1031 type stuff.
Gotcha. Then you also do a lot of the 1031s. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So you also done some reserve or reverse exchanges.
Yes.
So what's the reserve? Reverse.
I'll say reverse. Well, reverse. Well, you know, in the typical exchange, they call it a forward exchange. Someone sells and then they buy. Sometimes that order doesn't work well. Sometimes the asset is available first, so you want to buy it, and then you want to sell later. And so you have to reverse the normal order of things. And there's two different types of reverses. There's what they call a safe harbor reverse. It's still subject to the same, if people don't realize, it's 180 days to do an exchange. So if you sell something, you have 180 days to buy something. In the reverse, you buy something, and then you have 180 days to sell something. Oh, wow. And these SPEs I was talking to you about, we set those up sometimes for longer-term type investments so that a client knows they have an asset that they want to purchase, and we buy it from them. It could be a corporate headquarters or some large-scale asset. We purchase it. We develop it for them. We give them an option to purchase it. They don't necessarily have to purchase it, but they may purchase it. And in so doing, when they sell, then they trigger their 180 days. It gives them then the time and the availability of an exchange. But it's over a longer period of time. It requires some planning because you're going in and you're purchasing something. And there's some very interesting ways to purchase it. For instance, a client is allowed to loan up to 80% of the money to the project through an affiliate. So if a project was $1 million, they could themselves loan $800,000 to that project. We'll get $200 from an independent source or our own equity. And then we lease it to the client. And without belaboring it or going into great detail, but it has a lot of benefits, you know, for the client, basically. And that's a reverse exchange. So if you're going to buy first, you're in a reverse exchange.
Gotcha. Okay. That makes sense. I mean, kind of makes sense.
Kind of, yeah.
Short selling. I mean, it's like, well, you buy low, sell high. You sell high, then you buy low later on. It's like, well, so that, you know, 99.9% of your life, you live in one way. And so when you do the reverse, it's kind of like backing up a trailer, you know, with a boat on it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, whoa, you can't, if you only got the trailer to go left, you turn right. Right. You know, so.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, that's right.
But I'm sure that you've been through that a lot. You know, you mentioned earlier that you saw Joe Namath at Shea Stadium and you look super young, too young to be able to see Joe Namath.
Yeah.
Back in the 60s, because I think the Super Bowl was in the 69, wasn't it?
Yep.
So this was in the late 60s, I guess, that you saw Joe Namath. So tell us how some of those games went, or you went with your dad.
I used to go with my buddies to the Jets games. We were standing room only. It was like $6-8 a ticket, and you get to stand wherever they put you. And it was just a thrill, like, to be there. But at the same time, you got to remember, that was the Miracle Mets. The 69 Mets.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember I used to go to games with my dad. Now, the Mets were so bad, you had to see it. This guy, Ron Swoboda, he's just in the outfield. And I remember one day, a ball is hit, right? It goes right to him. It hits him in the mitt. It falls right out of the mitt. And I'm there with my dad. And I swear to God, he turns to me, he goes, "Can you believe they pay these guys?" that's what it was like. And then also, you know, they're world champions, you know? So it was.
Yeah, so I was a part owner of the Texas Rangers with Nolan Ryan, and Nolan was on that team. He wasn't the greatest Nolan Ryan. I think it was his first year in the big leagues or something, and he was already going with the Mets to the World Series and World Series champ. That was awesome, you know. So
yeah,
that's good. So so tell us about your family.
Oh, sure. Well, I married my wife Judy. We've been married for 20 some odd years, and we have 6 kids, and our youngest child is 15. She has special needs. She has Down syndrome, and she's a character, and her brother likes to do some productions here and there, and he likes to put his sister in the productions he's doing. So it's pretty lively.
Go ahead.
He's on TikTok. I don't know how long TikTok will be around, but but they enjoy it. And and my wife's a nurse, you know, and I'm a financial guy. So, yeah.
So how's the COVID affected you or not affected you? You said something earlier. I know we had a great talk before, you know, but you'd already gone remote.
Yeah. It was interesting. A couple of years ago, I was thinking we had so many personal situations going on with all the guys, and we wanted to go, you know, we had this office and we really don't want to go to it anymore. You know, and I said, you know what if we all, you know, try to work remotely And back then it was a new concept. And I'd like to say I was a visionary or something like that, but you know, it was just by sheer luck. It worked out that when the COVID hit, it was no change. It's just for us, it was great, you know? So I can't say COVID's great, but in terms of our business and what we found though, is there's still a lot of exchanges going on. There's a lot of activity. They still want to invest and they're looking actively. And I think if they find the right thing, they still want to do, you know, invest. I call it invest in America. They still really want to do it. Right. And so as long as that desire is there, I think we'll be okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. That's great. That's great. I thought you were a great visionary. I mean, that's great. I mean, it is. You're, yeah. As long as you can connect with other people and that everybody's on the same page. Mm-hmm. If everybody's on the same page and you can trust them and everybody's, you know, committed and you know, I mean I'm here and I've got, you know, 15 people around the offices here and not all of them are here today, but you know, I can pick up the phone and call them, but I can pick up the phone and call them from my house.
Yeah.
Whatever. You know, as long as they're doing their work, you know, who cares? Save some gas money. Don't save gas money. Spend gas money.
Spend, yeah, we need gas.
Exactly. You know, John, tell me a little bit about what's the most important attribute with you and your client? What is really important?
Well, I think the number one thing has to be trust. Clients come to us and they're depositing large amounts of money with us, or they're entrusting us to take care of their properties. So they have to really feel comfortable that we're going to do what we say we're going to do. You know, as part of that, you know, you have to talk to their advisor sometimes, you know, and you'll talk to other professionals that they trust. And so the whole idea is that the idea we're proposing actually works for them and they can trust us to accomplish it and to do to achieve the desired result. And that's okay. That's the bottom line.
Yeah. Because it's not necessarily a complicated transaction, but it's something that is kind of out of their hands and they're going, okay, well, I've been building this over my lifetime. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden all my money's going to go from one asset to another asset because of this gentleman here. And it's kind of I understand where you're coming from. So you know, the lawyers are there and they understand that, but it's like, you know, these guys are mostly entrepreneurs and they've been, you know, servicing rents on apartments for 20 years and now they're selling. And now you're telling them, hey, don't pay taxes on that. Take the profit and the money you're getting back and put that into something else. So,
and I think one of the things is they have to be made aware of it, because sometimes people embark on something and they don't know the option. And somebody mentions to them after the fact, well, it's a little too late then. Hopefully, And there's two types of clients. I think we get the type of person, it's a one-off, you know, it's their life savings or whatever. It's a, you know, and, but they don't do it often. They don't really understand it and you have to, you know, educate them. And we're very happy to do that and take them through the process so that they feel comfortable and it accomplishes their objective, you know, what they want out of it. Then we have clients who are regulars, you know, they're just repeat clients. They've learned how to do it. They've gotten good at it. They could probably tell me how to do it at this point, you know. So they're telling, they're advising me, you know. But we've taken them through the process. They're so comfortable with it, and that's the base. I think that's the real base of the business, because the repeat client comes back and goes, "Yeah, I like that. I want to do it again. It worked for me." It did what you said it would do, basically. And that's the bottom line.
I got you. That makes sense. That makes sense. I mean, they want to make sure that they're not – they made such a great profit off this one deal. They don't want to give it all up on the next deal and all that stuff. How do they normally find deals? I mean, they're not looking at my project yet, but we need to make sure that they are. But do their realtors that are selling their property normally find them something to buy? Is that how that –
A lot of times in an exchange, you're limited to the number of things that you can identify. And what we typically like to do is say to someone, well, pick one. Three is the normal, you know, without belaboring all the different rules. But let's say if you can pick three properties, simply put. The first two, I say, pick one, you know, your first. pick your second. And then as a third, you might want to have some sort of a fail safe. You know, you want to have something that you can select that will enable you to do an exchange, because if you don't hit one of your three choices, you can't do an exchange. So you start off on day one, and just a little information, within 45 days, you have to identify these properties. Anything you identify in those 45 days is what you are then eligible to exchange for. You can't exchange for something that you didn't identify. So you have to be really, really careful. And one of the things we try to tell people is, you know, there are things that are out there that you might want to look at that are not your classic investments that your real estate agent may not know about, but you should know about, just because they are choices that are available to you. Right. And, you know, and depending, you know, and you go on that basis, basically. So right. We try to help them through so that they have the best probability for success, if you will. Right.
That's great. That's great. And is that where my book, needs to go, is into their, yeah. Oh, hey, we're not trying to tell you that you should invest with oil and gas, but hey, here it is. No. So, because I was just thinking about that, because, and we tell people too, if whatever you have left over, boot money, or if you want to identify us and you know, because I know people would probably, they build an apartment complex or built a building and they get $3 to $4 million or whatever, and that's their deal, and they go, we're not going to put all that into oil and gas. Well, I wouldn't want you to. I'd want you to, you know, because I don't want you to. I want you to sleep at night, and because you've been very successful at your real estate transaction, I don't want you to worry about it. You know, I don't want you to go, oh my gosh, there's people off money in oil and gas. Yeah, our deal is risky. I mean, we our project is risky. Now, we mitigate the risk by showing you $20 break even, 40, 60, 80, but I can't tell you what the price oil is going to be next year, just like they can't tell you what the rents are going to be. You know, I was talking to somebody the other day, and they had a bunch of industrial space in L.A., and I said, well, it's the same as owning 1 million square feet in L.A. You own 1 million square feet. If you're going to sell it, what's the price? They said, well, it could be, you know, $20, $30. And I said, well, that's right, and you don't know until you sell it, and that's why you project what's going to happen. And that's why we can create value by drilling, make the value go up, but we don't know what the value is going to be until the very end. So that's kind of what our job is. You know, boy, I tell you, I've had a great time today talking to Johnny. I mean, he's in Pennsylvania. He's a New York Jets fan, a Mets, a Jets fan, and the go-to man for Wall Street-based energy companies. I mean, he's done 1031 exchanges for companies such as Shell, Chevron, Conoco, Aramco, and those kind of transactions. And I tell you what, it's been a great pleasure, John, having you on the show today.
Jay, Ben, I've really enjoyed it, and it's great talking to you.
Yeah, I've enjoyed our conversation, and I know you talked to some of our guys, and I look forward to talking more in the future. And you know, and I do travel, and I do like to go to sporting events, and you're the kind of guy that, I mean, you're the kind of guy I want to go to a sporting event with.
Let's go.
I'm excited. I am definitely excited about that, especially because you're not an Eagles fan. I mean, I couldn't go to a Cowboys-Eagle game with you. I mean, I've only been to one. I've been to Veterans Stadium one time with my grandfather, and, man, I tell you what, it was one of the scariest games I've ever been to, because it was I was walking in with a couple of guys that are bigger than me, and I'm like 6'4", 220. And these guys were bigger than me wearing cowboy hats, and I was like, oh, my gosh, this is it. Fortunately, we went in, and there's the elevators are right there by the. So we went in right straight in the elevator, went up, and you know it was okay.
It worked out.
Yeah, exactly. Glad we weren't sitting in the stands. I mean, if we'd been sitting in the stands, I mean, anybody in our back would have bombarded us. But it's been a great time.
I bet you got out alive.
That was one of the first times we met Jerry Jones, and this was my grandma has been my grandmother passed away in 95, so it was before 1995, but Jerry Jones came in to the suite. We were down like 2 touchdowns at halftime, and he goes, "We got them right where we want them." I mean, man, this is going to be a great game, and And we end up getting pounded like 40 points or something.
I call that the definition of an optimist. He's an optimist, isn't he?
Oh, my God, man, he was. Because at halftime, I was like, does he know something I don't know? Because I'm in the same game here, and he thinks we're going to win and all this kind of stuff. I'm like, man. And it was quick to realize during that second half when we got our butts beat that
it wasn't pretty. Well, I got to tell you, you know, it's funny. Like, you talk about little pieces of advice people give you. And then one of the best pieces of advice best advice I got was from an old football coach. And I was like in high school, and I used to carry the ball as a fullback, and I used to fumble sometimes. And one day he comes up, and this was a great life lesson. He goes, you know, son, he says, you went 10 yards, the ball went 2. He goes, son, it only counts if the ball is with you. Uh-huh. And so I tried to take that through life, you know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's great. Well, tell you what, John, I've really, really enjoyed having you on the show today. You know, I mean, people can learn about 1031s and the special purpose programs that you talked about. You know, look at his website. His website is congressassetexchange.com. So,
correct.
John Maggi, it's like magic, but without the C. John Maggi, I'm sure you've had that. Over and over.
Yeah, I get a lot of that.
So how do you say your name? Because I called you yesterday before we connected. I called and got your voicemail, and I was like, man, I hope this guy tells me how to pronounce his last name. So intently, you know, to make sure I don't screw up. And anyway, so it's been a pleasure having you on. I look forward to getting to know you better in the future, and thank you very much. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Jay.
Thanks.